The Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Virginia.
Welcome to this virtual session of the Supreme Court of Virginia. I am Chief Justice Espenard Goodwin. The other justices of the court are also present, with Senior Justice Leroy Millette sitting for Justice Donald Lemons. The audio of this virtual session is being live streamed on a link which can be accessed at vacourts.gov. Welcome, everyone. Ms. Clerk, please call the first case.
Board of Supervisors of the County of Albemarle versus Route 29 LLC. Greg Kampner, County Attorney, Andrew H. Herrick, Deputy County Attorney, Susan Baumgartner, Senior Assistant County Attorney, Peter J. Karamanis, Shelley S. Taylor, Appellees Counsel.
Counsel, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, I am.
You may do so.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Susan Baumgartner here for the Board of Supervisors of Albemarle County. This case is about whether Route 29 properly pled and proved that its zoning violation should have been overturned. The facts aren't in question here. The complaint and its attachments established that Route 29 was required to pay a proffer when public transportation was provided to the project, that public transportation was provided to the project, and that Route 29 refused to live up to its obligation and pay that money. Nevertheless, the Circuit Court denied the board's demurrer. Route 29 stipulated to those same facts before trial, and the Circuit Court still overturned the zoning violation. Now, Route 29's argument in its brief is that the fact that it won at trial establishes that it properly pled and proved its case.
Counsel, this is Justice Kelsey. May I interrupt you with a question?
Sure.
I'd like to ask you a hypothetical. The hypothetical is, if in 2007, the county had come to the developer and said, look, we want a commuter bus service. We don't need it because of your request for rezoning. It has actually nothing to do with your rezoning, but we do want a commuter bus service and we're having trouble paying for it. So we want you to start paying right now $50,000 a year for that. Would that hypothetical, not your case, because I know that you distinguish your case, would that hypothetical pass the Kuntz nexus and proportionality test? Could the county say that to a developer and not violate the Constitution?
If the county just said we want a commuter bus and didn't compare it to the traffic impacts?
Right. If they said I want a commuter bus service, but I concede, the county says to the developer, it's not because your request for rezoning requires it or even has any proportionality, much less a rough proportionality with a nexus. Would that scenario violate Dolan, Nolan, and Kuntz?
I don't think it would. And the distinction there is that it's a voluntary proffer. The owner would be free to say, no, we don't agree with that. I mean, at this point, you're just saying that the county's offering it, and could it be?
What doesn't Kuntz very clearly say, as well as Nolan, that if the municipality conditions the granting of the request upon an unconstitutional conditions doctrine violation, that is a violation of the doctrine?
If it conditions that, I didn't understand that to be your question, that it was conditioned. It was just that my understanding with your question was it was suggested as a potential voluntary proffer.
Counsel,
yes.
This is Justice Mims. As you may know, I cut my teeth in another fast-growing jurisdiction that had proffer issues and still does have proffer issues. I had to smile when you said, well, the applicant could say no. Theoretically, that's true. And theoretically, it's not conditioned when it is suggested. But I'm not doubting your honesty or your frankness or anything else, but I have to take it with a grain of salt, remembering what those quote negotiations end quote are like. What troubles me here is that it would appear that the original proffer was intended to reduce the number of traffic of trips on Route 29 by moving them from individual cars to a congregate, to a bus service, in order to come to the improvement and leave the improvement. Ironically, what we have now is an increased number of vehicle trips coming to the improvement and leaving the improvement. Although I don't doubt that that this does benefit the county overall by reducing the number of trips into the more populated area, it just doesn't seem to fit with what was originally intended. So if you'd respond to that, I'd be grateful.
Sure. Well, first of all, we have no evidence what was originally intended here, because Route 29 didn't put on any evidence of what was going on in 2007. And they had the burden of proving here that this action was unconstitutional, and that unconstitutionality was an appropriate defense to the enforcement of the transit proffer. And
well, I'm sorry to interrupt you again, but let me follow up on the last question and focus this for you. Going back to my hypothetical, forget the distinction between please give us the $50,000 for something that has nothing to do with your development versus give us the $50,000 that has nothing to do with your development or you won't get the permit. So forget that distinction for a second. Suppose in a hypothetical situation, suppose the municipality said the latter, which is, look, you're not going to get the permit unless you give us $50,000 a year. And it doesn't matter to us that it's your development doesn't push this cost on us under the Coons test. What more needs to be said on that hypothetical? Wouldn't that clearly be a perfect example of a violation of the Nolan Dolan Coons standard?
Well, I'm not sure it would be, because there is I'm not sure there's a distinction to be made between traffic in and out of the project as opposed to traffic over roads. There's no dispute here. In fact, Route 29's expert said there are more traffics over county roads. There's more traffic over county roads because of this development. And
so do you actually believe you could actually put on an evidentiary case of essential nexus and rough proportionality and win that, get based on the evidence in this record?
Well, I think part of that goes to the burden of proof and who had the burden of proof. Because in 2007, Route 29 had the opportunity to say, we feel that we're pressured, or actually their predecessor in interest, Route 29 had the opportunity, I believe in 2011 and 2013, our predecessor in interest, or we felt we were pressured into this, there is no essential nexus or rough proportionality, and they could have fought that out at the time. However, given the way that they chose to seek the declaratory judgment years and years and years after this became their responsibility to pay, yes, they had the burden of proving that it was unconstitutional, and they didn't do so. However, had the county had that burden, I do believe the county could have met the essential nexus test. Dolan itself talks about how in reducing traffic congestion does meet the essential nexus test. And I think given that the evidence here was that the project increased traffic over roads and the commuter bus decreased traffic over roads, that's the decision. That's the issue there, not whether or not more cars are turning into the project.
That's not the way I understand Coons. Coons says there has to be a nexus between the development and the causation of the development on the public fisc. Not that the public fisc is ebbing and flowing and we need some more money generally. It is the causational nexus between the development and the social burdens caused by the development.
And there was evidence here from the Route 29's expert that 2/3 of the trips into the project were new trips to the county road network. So if that project is then used as a hub for a commuter route that takes cars out of the county road network, then it does meet that essential nexus.
Well, that's like saying, well, we didn't need this in 2007 because there was no need for it, but our county has expanded and become more populous and we need better roads. So generally speaking, why don't we go around to all the developers and ask for more money generally for the county generally, irrespective of the individual impacts of the developments themselves. Does that square with the doctrine?
I don't think it does, but this case, it was the specific impacts of this action. There were hundreds of, I believe hundreds of thousands of acres that were perhaps not hundreds of thousands. There was a substantial number of acres that were rezoned from agricultural to the light industrial, that or the commercial. That's a huge impact on transportation.
Then why didn't y'all ask for the $50,000 in 2007? You waited, what, 9 years to figure out that there was a causal nexus?
The causal nexus always existed. It was just a matter of when the commuter route was there. In 2007, the project wasn't built yet. The project hadn't begun to affect transportation yet. The project began to affect transportation once it was built out and people were driving to there. The rezoning, at the moment the rezoning occurs, doesn't create the transportation. It's when the project is built and people are driving to it that creates the increased traffic. And regardless, the unconstitutionality wasn't a defense. It was untimely by statute. It was a thing decided because there was no appeal of the zoning administrator's finding that the commuter route triggered the proffer. It was an invited error because, again, this was a voluntary proffer that had Route 29 decided to dispute at the time, they could have.
We didn't grant assignment of error number one, did we?
No, you did not. However, that doesn't mean that that doesn't change the law that this court applies. And this court still has to determine whether unconstitutionality was an available defense because it's the only defense offered by Route 29.
My last question, we didn't grant assignment of error number four either, did we?
No.
And that means the assignment of error four was the trial court erred in reversing the zoning violation because it found an insufficient nexus between commuter route used to allegedly trigger the transit proffer under the facts and circumstances existing at this time. So we didn't grant that. So that's law of the case, isn't it?
It is. However, it is the only thing offered by Route 29 in defense of the county's arguments that it stipulated to all the elements of the violation and that they were all established by the complaint as well. That is the only thing that Route 29 has disputed is the constitutionality in this matter. I'm sorry, Your Honor, you're muted.
Thank you. Tell me if I misunderstand, but your argument appears to be that that Route 29 didn't comply, but Route 29, in fact, is saying that their requirement to comply has never been triggered.
Well, they are saying that because it is unconstitutional. They conceded that the commuter route is public transportation, and that is the trigger, public transportation, not a type of public transportation, not public transportation that they approve of, but public transportation.
So if I take your argument to its logical conclusion, if you use these funds to pay for a commuter route that didn't even touch their property, that would be public transportation, would it not?
That would not be public transportation serving the property, which is what the proffer said.
But that goes back to my original point. This public transportation doesn't serve the property. It merely touches the property. It serves the county. Do you agree with that?
It depends on the means served. Proffers are for the benefit of the county. They are not for the benefit of the landowner. The landowner gets the rezoning as their benefit. But yes, I would argue that bringing people to the property who can be shoppers does serve the property as well.
For the mere fact that we're having this dialogue seems to indicate that they at least have stated a cause of action on their in their pleadings.
But they stipulated that it was public transportation on the property, and they cannot rise above their stipulations. I would like to reserve the remaining of the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
All right, you have 1 minute and 21 seconds, counsel. You may proceed. You're muted.
Sorry about that. Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Pete Karamanis. I'm counsel for the appellee Route 29 LLC, whom I will refer to as the owner in my remarks. As has been discussed, the assignments of error for which this court granted review involve the trial court's denial of the county's demurrer and its denial of the county's motion to strike the plaintiff's evidence at trial. In each case, the county notes that the owner stipulated that public transportation implemented in this case, which I'll call the commuter bus or the commuter route, was a form of public transportation. The county argues that the owner has therefore somehow waived the protections that is afforded by statute and the Constitution. A few points for clarity to start are important. Number one, the owner did not and does not contest the validity or reasonableness of the proffer as written, but rather as interpreted and applied as relates to the commuter bus. Number two, the owner never stipulated or conceded that the proffer requirements were met or properly triggered. And number three, the owner has steadfastly held that the commuter bus did not constitute the type of public transportation required to sustain an essential nexus with the rezoning. The latter is a stipulated fact.
Well, this is Justice Kelsey.
Yes, Your Honor.
Assignment of error four was an attempt to address the trial court's factual finding of insufficient nexus, and that was not an assignment of error granted. So we take that as a given for purposes of processing. I do have one question for you that still puzzles me about y'all's case. I was unable to find, as of yet, any post-Kuntz opinion that addresses a condition subsequent proffer. In other words, the reason why I asked Ms. Baumgartner the first question I asked, which is, if there's no nexus at the time, and the municipality says, look, we're not going to give you the permit unless you give us $50,000 because we need it for a commuter service. It doesn't matter to us that we don't need it because of you personally. We just need it. That would clearly be unconstitutional under the doctrine. But the nuance here is they didn't do that. They waited 9 years and did it. So the first fork in the road analytically for me is, would the Kuntz doctrine, the unconditional conditions doctrine, be any different when it's triggered later if it could not have been triggered ab initio? Did you find any case law addressing in either direction that particular nuance?
I did not, Your Honor, but I'll tell you my analysis of that scenario is that obviously if you have a proffer that has a condition as to a trigger in the future, then trying to apply that Kuntz analysis would be extremely difficult at the outset when the proffer is put in place because you don't know the facts surrounding the actual application of that proffer. And so I think that analysis has to happen at the time that the proffer is triggered so that the facts that are specific to that can be analyzed as to whether or not there is an essential nexus and rough proportionality as required by the Dolan and Kuntz line of cases. What's interesting here is we obviously have the county's argument that is strictly looking at the plain meaning of the words on the page without acknowledgement that those words can take different forms. And as the trial court explored that, it explored a few hypotheticals, which are found in the appendix on pages 66 and 68. One involved a bus, a school bus, picking up children with developmental disabilities from the subject property, and whether or not that as a form of public transportation would trigger the proffer. And the county's response to the court's question there was, that they think that you'd have to hear the facts of the case. The county has conceded that despite the, when it's convenient for it to say the words on the page are clear, that really they're not. I mean, there are different forms of public transportation that may or may not satisfy the requirements of this proffer. And whether they may or may not is dependent on whether or not the essential nexus is present. Interestingly, also in discussing that hypothetical, the county ultimately decided at the trial court that it would not trigger the proffer. That school bus would not trigger the proffer because it was, quote, specifically dedicated to the transportation of students. So needless to say, that's not a standard that was based on the plain language of the proffer and is inconsistent with the county's overarching argument that any form of public transportation, including this commuter bus, would be sufficient.
So let me ask you what I think is the hardest question for you, which is, why can't the county just say, too bad, so sad? You agreed to it, you took the risk, you put a clause in there, you agreed to a clause, public transportation service, that's incredibly broad. It includes school buses for handicapped kids. So live with it, your problem.
I think that is what they've said. And I think that our response to that obviously is there's a reason that the statutory law and the parallel constitutional law exist. And it is to protect owners from that type of overreach. The county's position ultimately creates a situation where when you have a future condition that could be interpreted different ways, it would allow for gross government overreach if they can just determine to interpret that however they want with no guidelines, no restrictions. These examples that I was just talking about that the trial court went through, I mean, you can think of even more absurd examples. We talked about one at the trial court level about a county car. You know, they have these just individual passenger cars. And what if you sent one up to the property to pick up a single county employee at midnight to bring him to work for his night shift? Isn't that public transportation? It's a county-owned vehicle. That has nothing to do with anything. And really, when you look at...
Council, this is Justice Powell.
Yes.
I agree with you that the statutory and constitutional overlay protect from overreach, but does it protect from buyer's remorse? Does it protect from, we agreed to it then, but we think now it's a bad idea?
No, I don't think it does at all. And that brings up a good point that was raised in one of the county's briefs about sort of change in circumstances and whether an owner could somehow argue against the proffer based on change of circumstances. And I want to be clear that that's not what's happening here. There's no change in circumstance that the owners are relying on in saying that this trigger of the proffer is inappropriate. This would have been inappropriate the week after the proffer was put in place, and it is inappropriate now because it does not sustain the essential nexus. This bus that was put in place is not intended to address an impact caused by the development, which is the standard. And because it is not intended to address that impact, was never mentioned, there's nothing in the record to say that that was the goal, was to address the traffic impact from this development. And it doesn't. I mean, all the evidence shows that it actually doesn't address an impact. So all of those factors would lead this particular trigger to be unconstitutional, regardless of any change in circumstance, you know, whether the development was built or not, profitable or not, that would be irrelevant to, from our perspective, to this analysis.
But if the county decided to, rejigger things such that there'd be a bus stop that would stop at this specific development to bring people to shop there, work there, whatever, then it would be a different answer, possibly, right?
Well, I think you could possibly have a different answer. I mean, obviously, as when I say that we're not contesting the proffer language, we envision that there could be a scenario where you could provide public transportation to the property that would have the essential nexus.
Right. We just want a county bus 3-4 times a day. We're going to build a bus stop, and then the bus is going to stop there 3-4 times a day to bring shoppers, workers, whatever. And that's going to cost umpty-ump, and then that fits within the proffer. So in those circumstances, it's different from the school children using a bus there. It has nothing to do with the development itself.
Yes, Your Honor, I agree. And it is not strictly a requirement that it brings shoppers, which I know was something that was discussed. But obviously, if it brings shoppers, then it is, as a consequence, taking away cars that would otherwise be driving to the property. And that is the important factor there.
Let me interrupt for a second. That's important because if the trial judge in this scenario, in your case, had actually found that there was a sufficient nexus and there was enough of a rough proportionality, then you'd lose, right? I know the court did not find that, but you would lose the case if those factual findings hadn't been made.
Yes, I agree. And again, that goes back to us saying we don't dispute the proffer as a whole or as written. In fact, we represented at trial that we do believe that this proffer could constitutionally be enforced if the circumstances surrounding the form of public transportation were different, and if it could be shown that in implementing that form of public transportation, that A, the goal was to address an impact of the development, and B, it actually does address an impact of the development, then I think the essential nexus would be shown. Of course, rough proportionality would be the next step and would be fact dependent, but certainly that is a possibility to have a form of public transportation that does satisfy this requirement.
Counsel, this is Justice Millett. Can I ask you a question? It seems to me that it'd be a much better process if this challenge was made at the time the proffer was entered into. I understand that proffers are, I understand my colleague's concern that proffers are not as voluntary as the county puts them out to be. But in any event, you certainly could have challenged at the time the proffer was made that, yes, this is the proffer we're willing to make, but the language is not really satisfy our concerns that we be treated fairly and in a constitutional manner. Isn't it a problem to do this 9 years later as opposed to at the time the proffer is made?
Yes, I agree, Your Honor, that obviously if the proffer was written more clearly, I mean, it's difficult to obviously address every potential situation. And the county's land use law handbook itself actually advises against conditional proffers because these types of debates can happen. But nevertheless, that was the proffer that was put in place with the agreement of the prior owner and the county. So we're stuck with what it is right now. As far as contesting it at the time, you know, again, I think we're stuck with the scenario there where it's not unconstitutional on its face. So for us to try to have made that argument at the time would be difficult because we would be projecting a scenario that may be unconstitutional depending on the facts of the public transportation that was actually created to serve the property. But there may have been a form of public transportation that actually met the essential nexus and rough proportionality tests, in which case there would be no basis to contest it. And so, in 2007, when the proffer is put in place, because you can envision a proper enforcement of that proffer, it's a little hard to contest it. Obviously, looking back in hindsight, I'm sure both the county and the owner would have tried to write this proffer a little differently.
And wouldn't you have the risk that if you come in before it's enforced, when it's written fairly broadly, then the court might say, you want an advisory opinion on something that may or may never happen. I'm busy with real cases. Come back when, you know, things are problematic or not problematic.
Yes, I think we certainly would. And to some degree, that did happen as we were trying to even just go through this before the zoning violation was put in place. There were some references to the fact that we had initially filed a declaratory judgment action, and the county's response to that was essentially, this isn't the right remedy. There's nothing to be determining at this point. And ultimately, we ended up, you know, having to be served with a notice of violation and then appealing that, which is what brought us here. But I agree that, you know, until these facts were put in place and known, it would be extremely difficult to try to argue about all of the various possibilities that could have could have been implemented based on the language of the proffer. I see that my time is expiring. I appreciate your consideration and ask that the rulings of the trial court be affirmed.
Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal?
Even not looking at 2007, at 2016, Route 29 filed a declaratory judgment. At that point, they knew exactly what the county was considering the trigger to the transit proffer to be, because Ms. Ragsdale sent the letter saying it's time to pay the transit proffer. And Route 29 filed a declaratory judgment and chose to non-suit that case. That was the time. That was within 30 days.
Can I interrupt you there, counsel? But you can file a deck action before a cause of action accrues. That's the whole point of deck actions. But there's no, as far as I know, there's no res judicata or collateral estoppel or any doctrine that says if you don't file a premature deck action, you can't file an action when enforcement is actually implemented.
It's not premature. It's the issue of a thing decided. The zoning administrator had decided that the commuter route triggered the transit proffer. And at the time, Route 29 chose not to fight that. They chose—
Generally speaking, tell me, just broadly speaking, when the government does something that's unconstitutional, let's assume for the sake of argument with conceding nothing, in 2007, there was zero nexus and you couldn't have asked for this proffer and implicitly demanded it. Isn't the general rule across all doctrinal basis that you can attack the government when it enacts something that's wrong before they enforce it, and you can also attack it later when it is actually enforced, which is what they're doing here?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe that is the rule in zoning issue, in zoning cases with Eli, with Lilly, with Dick Kelly Enterprises, with this court in Eubanks last August. There's a finality in zoning.
But we didn't grant the limitations arguments, which is the finality arguments. We didn't grant that assignment of error. So why is that particular problem something we need to address in this case?
The reason is because the only defense here is essentially an affirmative defense of unconstitutionality. Route 29 has admitted that otherwise the zoning violation was properly established. So the only way they're having this, they believe this should be overturned, is based on unconstitutionality. So therefore, because their burden is to prove the unconstitutionality, they must also prove that it's an available defense.
Okay. Thank you. I've taken you over your time. I apologize.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Your time is up. Thank you both. Please call the next case, Ms. Clerk.